This morning we'll look at the Gospel of John, the sixth chapter. This is immediately following Jesus' feeding of the 5,000. Once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they got into the boats and went to Capernaum in search of Jesus. When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" And Jesus answered, "Very truly, I tell you, you are looking for me, not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him God the Father has placed his seal of approval." Then they asked him, "What must we do to do the works God requires?" And Jesus answered, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent." So they asked him, "What sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do?" "Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." And Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." "Sir," they said, "always give us this bread." Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." At this time, I'd like to invite the children. This is what we call a feeding frenzy. While the children are going back to their seats, let me finish the poll that Laura began with. She talked about not feeding her children this morning. Before church, let me just ask you, how many of you had breakfast this morning? A lot of you did. A lot of you are like me. We don't usually eat much before church on Sundays because we always know there's going to be donuts. So, you know, we don't want to waste it on something good before we get to church. If you haven't already, find your sermon notes for this morning. It looks like this. Find the front page at the very bottom. For our memory verse today, we are going to consider John chapter 6, verse 35. Then Jesus declared, and I would like for you to say this with me. All right? Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty." Well, we're talking about food this morning. We've established that breakfast is a very important meal of the day. It certainly was for me growing up on the farm with all the things that we had to do, baling hay, feeding the hogs, putting up fence, whatever it might be. You needed a lot of fuel, a lot of energy for the day. And so we had a very hearty breakfast most days. Eggs, toast, bacon, ham, whole milk, not that skim stuff that we drink to be healthy, but the real thing, all of the milk, including all the dirt that went with it because it wasn't pasteurized, all those good things that gave you protein and fueled the body. Well, today, my children don't eat quite the same as I did, especially for breakfast. They eat very healthily most of the time, most days. But we also give them a treat every now and then, just like you look forward, or a lot of you look forward to donuts on Sunday morning as a treat. We also have a treat at the Tiemann household, usually on Wednesdays. Since the time the boys were little and going to school, Wednesday was donut day. Because there is breakfast, and then there is breakfast. But not just any kind of donut would do either. Couldn't just go to the store and get the prepackaged kind, all wrapped in cellophane with artificial flavorings and preservatives and colors and God knows what else. Instead, we would go to the Heavenly Donut place here in Crystal Lake, and I don't know why I like it, if it's the donuts, or because of the name Country. Country Donuts. Anybody like Country Donuts? Raise your hand. There you go. Country Donuts is what we have here at church on Sunday mornings. Because there are donuts and then there are donuts. And that's what the people of Jesus' day knew as well. There is bread, and then there's bread. We just had the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus did this miracle. He provided for the multitude, and now, because of that, they were continuing to follow him, in fact, all the way across the lake. If you look at your notes, we see the reason why. They wanted more miracles. They wanted more bread. They wanted more food. They wanted more healing. They wanted more of their problems solved. Maybe even Jesus would do something really spectacular, like turn water into wine again. That was pretty cool. But unfortunately, they did not understand the signs. They didn't really know what this was all about. They didn't know what it meant. Matthew says so clearly, though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. They thought Jesus was a bread king, an actual bread king, that he was here only to fulfill their bodily needs. You see, they wanted more bread, but they didn't understand that bread spoils. Is anybody going to eat at, say, 12 or 12:15 here at the potluck today? Raise your hand. If not here, later, raise your hand. Or is anybody going to eat tomorrow? Raise your hand. The day after that, raise your hand. The day after that. We have to continue, don't we? Every day. You got to eat, and you got to eat, and you got to eat again. And if you're a teenager, you eat about 8 times a day. The things of this earth are consumed. They spoil. And they fade away. Life is short in my generation. People over 40. Okay, over 50. All right, over 55. We're just beginning to understand that life is short. We're seeing a lot of our friends, those people that we grew up with, maybe older than us, that are gone, that are no longer with us. There was one guy, let's call him Joe. Joe had wanted a boat his entire life, but his wife had always said no, they couldn't afford it. And so frugality had always won out. Until one day, Joe saw the obituaries in the newspaper. I know a lot of you read the obituaries every day to make sure your name isn't in it. So Joe was doing that, but he saw his friend Fred. Fred was in the newspaper. He was in the obituary column. Now, Joe had lost track of Fred over the years. They grew up together, went to high school together, and now he is dead. And so he took this as a sign. Life is short. And so that very weekend, he went out and he bought that boat that he had always wanted. A couple of days later, he got a phone call from another friend, a high school friend as well. And he said, it sure was tragic, wasn't it, about Fred? You know, the boating accident? Life is short. And people will look for meaning to fill the hole in their heart, the hole in their soul. It's what the people of Jesus' day were doing. But they were coming to him for all the wrong reasons. They wanted to be filled up with material bread. In fact, some of them would even make a deal with Jesus. They had asked this question, is here, there, in your notes. What must we do to do the works God requires? In other words, what must we do to get more of this bread? And we're really not that much different, are we? We bargain with God all the time. You know how it goes. Lord, I will do this. Come to worship more often. Pray more frequently. Break fewer commandments. If you will then do this, and just fill in the blank. Take care of my children. Make me more prosperous. Take away the fear and the frustration and the anxiety of my life. Whatever it is, we make this deal with God. And so we need to ask ourselves, why are we here? Why do we come to worship in the first place? Well, if you turn over your notes, we also need to ask the question, who is it that we are going to follow? Because we all know that we need meaning in life, but where are we going to find it? The teacher in the Old Testament says this, meaningless, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. We need to find some purpose and direction. We need to fill that hole in our soul, but how are we going to do that? I know a lot of you fly rather frequently, but if you've ever been to the airport, you know how frustrating that can be from time to time. Anybody ever gone to O'Hare and they moved the gate on you? As the story goes, there was a man, he had gone to the airport, and the plane was having mechanical difficulties, and so while it was being fixed, they moved the gate. Went over there, and well, then they moved the gate again. It's always further down the corridor, so there he went. Got on the plane, and they do the obligatory announcement, as they always do. Make sure that you're going to the right place. In this particular case, it was going to LaGuardia. Check your tickets. Make sure that you're headed to LaGuardia. If not, it is time to deplane. Well, the man was rather embarrassed because it wasn't where he was going. So he got off the plane. He was embarrassed. He was red-faced. But he also happened to be the pilot. A word of advice. Be sure the pilot knows where he's headed. Be sure you know who you're following. Be sure you know where you're finding your meaning and purpose and direction in life. Now, we've got a pretty good crowd gathered here this morning for worship. But there are a lot larger crowds, and I'm not talking about other churches this morning, but a lot larger crowds in other places around our area today. I guarantee you, you could go out to Lippold Park this morning, and there would be much larger crowds than this because it is there where people are looking for meaning in the lives of their children. And certainly there is meaning in the lives of our children, but not the kind that fills the soul. So often we think it's through our children that we are going to be fulfilled. If they grow up to be successful, then we feel successful as well. And so there they are at the baseball fields and softball fields and soccer fields. And no different in the wintertime at the hockey rinks. Or people are looking for meaning in their stock portfolio, in their bank account. And certainly it is important to plan for the future, to store up for what might happen. But all of that is going to spoil and fade away. Even the richest people in the world can never store up enough. A generation ago, John D. Rockefeller was the richest man on the planet. And yet when he died, his accountant was asked, how much did John D. leave behind? And he didn't say millions or billions. Instead, he said everything. Everything. He left it all behind because you can't take it with you. Not your money or your prestige or your power or your success. And so Jesus says, I am the bread of life. Christ alone gives meaning to this life. Christ alone provides meaning for the next. Christ alone is the one who gives us purpose and direction and fills that hole in our soul. If you take a look at your notes, you can fill in the blanks. It is the bread of life that satisfies our hunger. And so Jesus said to the crowds of that day, and he says to us, work then for the food that endures. Not for the bread that's going to spoil. Not for the kind of bread that you have to eat again in just a few hours. Not the kind of bread that you have to eat again tomorrow. But the bread that will endure forever. And so again, the people said, what must we do? Because they misunderstood. They were still trying to make that deal with God. And so Jesus makes it entirely clear. He says, the work of God is this. It's not your works. It's not your righteousness. It's not about you keeping the commandments. The work of God is to believe in the one he has sent. And lest we still misunderstand, we have this beautiful verse from Ephesians chapter 2. Even our faith is a work of God. It's not our decision. It's not our work. It is God's gift. It is by grace you have been saved through faith. And this not of yourselves. If people only had looked back to a few days earlier, when Jesus took those 5 loaves and those 2 fishes, and he fed the multitude, and there was so much left over that they gathered 12 basketfuls. The people had done nothing. It was God's gift to them. For us, the greatest object lesson is the baptismal font. On Saturday night, we had about a 6-month-old baby. Still was not walking. She was carried by her parents to the font. She did absolutely nothing. The water was poured over her head. The words were said. Even the confession, because she couldn't yet talk for herself. It was God's gift. It was God's work, giving her the faith that baptism creates. Even this worship thing that we do, the hymnal calls it the divine service. And we come and we give service to God, the divine. We sing our songs of praise. We offer up our prayers. We'll receive an offering for the Lord's work. And then we'll go out this week and we will serve Him. And all of that is important. And yet, it is a divine service. Or as the old German said, it is Gottesdienst. God's work. It's what God does for us. It is His gift. Here we are filled with the bread of life. Here we receive Jesus Himself. Imagine, if you will, that Jesus is standing here in front of you this morning, just like He did in front of the disciples on Maundy Thursday. And He takes off His outer jacket, and then He puts the towel around His waist, and He stoops down, and He gets on His knees with that bowl of water, and He washes each one of your feet. So often we're like Peter, and we say, no, I'm not worthy. Let me wash your feet. And Jesus says, no, He is the one who serves us. He is the one who fills us so that we can then go and serve Him. Until we are filled, we can do nothing for Him. And this is what people are blowing off this morning. To go out to the parks and the lake, to go fishing. To be on the river, to boat, to spend an extra day at the cabin. To watch their children on those playgrounds. When they could be here. Being filled with the bread of life, being served by God Himself. Even worship is a gift from God. Because, my friends, there is bread, and then there is bread. May you be filled again this day with Jesus Christ, the bread of life.